Hello and welcome to Nerdy Boys Reviews. We are your hosts. I'm Nerdy Boy Scott.
And I'm Nerdy Boy Christian.
This is your weekly nerd podcast where we review new and old movies alike. Explicit content warning, this podcast may not be suitable for all listeners of all ages. Material on this podcast has been deemed to be vulgar, rude, and sometimes even crude, so you have been warned. What up, my motherfucking nerdy peeps? What's going down, everybody? I hope everybody has had a good start to the week.
It's Monday.
I know what you guys are thinking. Wait, I thought you guys came out with a new format and it was Friday and Sundays. Whoa, chill the fuck out, first off.
I mean, guys, stop pressuring us. Like, did you really think we were going to stick to that? Joke's on you.
No.
I know, guys. It's not Film Review Friday this time. It's Movie Review Monday, okay?
Yeah, because we did not do it on Friday for some odd reason.
You had to work. And, you know. Yeah, we'll say that. We didn't plan well.
All right. Yeah, we'll leave it at that. But, nevertheless, we are delivering the goods.
The goods. We are here today on a Monday to talk to you about Rogue One, A Star Wars Story, revisiting this movie. We did a previous review on it already, but
and a certain listener wasn't very he wasn't content with our initial review, and he demanded us to review it again, saying that we gave it two glowing of reviews, and you know we must hate this movie,
or at least like it less. Let me just ask you right off the bat, then, Scott, did you like it less?
No.
Did you like it more?
No.
Just about the same?
It's about the same, but I did find a lot of problems with it this time.
Yeah, I mean, there are some narrative issues here and there.
Yeah. But honestly, like, overall, I guess I could say a little less. Like, but, like, when I say a little, I mean, like, you know, a tiny, tiny bit less. There are some things that are wrong with it, and there's some I feel like some good talking points, and you know, some of them I felt like we went over in our original review of Rogue One, but we can revisit some of those topics. So where do you want to start? Where should we start?
I don't know. It's there's so many places we could start.
All right, story wise, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's good, bad, what do you think?
The story, I mean, was kind of all, it's pretty much outlined for them, you know? I mean, they just have to kind of fill in the details.
Correctamundo.
And I guess we judge them on how well they do that and how well they motivate characters and how well they explain things. And the story actually moves along at a pretty good pace after the first scene. I mean, the first scene is a little slow with, you know, pretty much recruiting Galen Erso back into the Empire and everything. And, you know,
right.
That might make a lot of people be like, oh, well, this is starting pretty slow. It's kind of, I don't know what's going on, blah, 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 whatever. But, you know, after that, the movie kind of starts picking up. It's a really good pace to the film, I think. But one of the first things that you notice is, how do they even know who this girl is? How does the rebellion know who Jyn Erso is?
Yes. Yeah, I was like thinking about it, right? And I did come up with a theory, right?
Mm-hmm.
Of like, because in the movie, Sol Guerrero does talk about, you know, she was traveling, you know, with him for many years, and then people did start to figure out. But it's still like, how it doesn't really make sense. They don't really explain how they know where she is and like
who she is, you know, what she looks like,
all those things. It's like, because you know she's actually going by an alias.
Yeah.
I forget what the alias is.
I mean, unless they've been keeping tabs on her since Saul Guerrera abandoned her at the age of 16. Like,
right.
I mean, it's like, how do they really know? And they don't explain it to you, which is something that I'm very picky about usually in movies. And Scott says, why do you care so much, dude? Just, you know, enjoy it. Because, you know, sometimes things do go unexplained, but when they do, it seems like things are improperly motivated and it's a huge kind of contrivance in the plot.
Correct.
So, but other than that, I mean, is there any other plot issues you had an issue with? Any other story issues? Or do you think they kind of motivated everyone properly and resolved everything nicely? And
I would say that, but there's definitely things that we could talk about. The morally gray rebellion. It seems like It seems like that whole thing of like
it's not your Boy Scout rebellion of A New Hope for sure. No. Which even then, I mean, they weren't really like necessarily Boy Scouts, but I don't know. You get Cassian Andor, you know, one of the first people we meet from this rebellion. As we get our introduction in the movie, and he meets up with his informant, and his informant gives him some pretty fucking special and important information. And then he just kills him. Didn't really have a great reason for doing it, but maybe he thought he was tying up loose ends, protecting the rebellion by killing this guy before the Imperials got a hold of him, because he wouldn't have been able to escape and all that stuff. So in his mind, maybe he felt like he was doing the right thing, protecting the rebellion in a way.
Yeah, there's like so many different ways you could go with like this sort of conversation, because then you think about, and I don't want anybody to think that I'm talking down about the military, but, obviously the military kills people.
Right.
The sense of a greater good.
Yeah.
So is it that same sort of thing where, it was like the necessary evil of like killing somebody in order to protect the mission or whatever?
Yeah, I mean, there definitely is, as you say, like the gray area there. And it's the same thing with Saul Guerrera and what he does pretty much. I mean, he has his own reasons for doing it, and it is to fight against the Empire and to really, it is the same kind of ideology of the rebellion, it's just done in a much different way, and he thinks what he's doing is the right way to do it. So.
Right. Yeah. Talking about Saul Guerrera, I know that you felt that the whole idea of him being a radical, rebellious part of the rebellion was improperly motivated. I disagree personally. But
No, I don't think it's improperly motivated. I think they spend a lot of time trying to tell you how extreme he is when he doesn't do anything more extreme than anybody else in the rebellion has done. Like, they try to tell you, he's this off faction, he's causing us all these problems, but that's what a rebellion does. They fight against tyranny. They actively try to defeat the people oppressing them, and that's all he's really doing. He's not, he's not
there. There is, like, an extreme part of the rebellion. Like, obviously, Cassian is, like, operating as, like, a rogue agent in a way. Orders from somebody, but, that... To kill,
but he's like their leading team officer agent,
not all of the rebellion, acts like that, So I guess it's like, it's kind of unfair to like say that, they all perform actions in that sort of manner, because that's not true. There are extremists in the rebellion.
Yeah.
It's arguable, killing somebody's like the worst thing you could do, but also in the same terms, like torturing somebody the way that Saul Guerrera did is equally, bad.
I mean, yes, you shouldn't torture people. That's a given, right? But I don't know necessarily if he tortured the guy. I mean, he just had this monster kind of get the information out of him, like, because he can read thoughts and stuff, and that obviously had a psychological impact on his mind.
Right, which is a form of torture.
But he recovered from it very quickly.
Torture is generally meant for one thing, is grabbing information.
Right.
That's what he did. It's torture.
Maybe. I mean, I don't know what Saul Guerrera does in this film that is any worse than trying to assassinate someone without giving him a fair trial, or killing somebody who just gave you important information. Like, I don't see the extremist version of that. But the film really wants you to believe he's an extremist based on what they tell you, and even how his team fights against the Imperials. It really looks like a lot like something out of the Middle East in our modern day war era. The way, yeah, like, exactly. Like that kind of skirmish in the streets, you know?
Yes.
So the movie informs you of that, but his actions itself don't tell me that he is this huge extremist.
I disagree. The only thing he did, right, was save Jin. I mean, literally.
Well, he didn't really save Jin. I mean, he could have left her in that bunker, and she probably still would have survived on her own. Like, we don't really know, but.
What are you talking about? When she was like 16?
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, maybe.
That's like the only heroic act that like we truly know that he's done. But, you know, the way that his army performs under his command, the way he uses that creature to extract information that is a form of torture. I mean, those are all things that extremists do.
See, the way I see it is like, everyone else in the rebellion is kind of like just sitting there plotting and planning, and his team and him are the people that are actually doing stuff. They're doing the dirty work. They're doing what needs to be done.
I think you like view like his character in the wrong way. Like, I think you're trying to compare it to something else. You're trying to compare because you're actively in this discussion. You're even saying, oh, but look at Cassium. Look at Cassium. Look at everybody else kill people and stuff. That doesn't take away from his own actions and what he's done in his own past. It doesn't make him not an extremist just because we don't see him physically kill somebody.
No, what I'm saying is that in the context of this movie, you know, like the things he's doing may seem extreme, but that's the kind of things, like that's the kind of dirty work that still needs to be done in a rebellion as well, you know? And I feel like his team is actually actively fighting against the Empire, whereas Mon Mothma and the rest of the rebels are just talking about things, you know?
Like, no, but there's like a centralized rebellion that he's not a part of, that he acts, him and his like ragtag group of people, they act alone. They have their own missions. They don't take orders from the actual rebellion, hence the reason that they sent Jin in order to get him to help them. And that even tells you exactly, too. He performs in an extremist way. He does his own things. He has his own set of beliefs outside of just what the rebellion does.
Right, but he's also a rebel, and we're led to believe that him and his team used to be members of the Rebel Alliance. They just kind of either factioned off or were kicked out, and then Mon Mothma says, oh, yeah, they're causing all sorts of problems for us, but they don't really cause any problems for them. Like, well, they don't, I mean, interact with them negatively.
Just because, like,
anyway,
we don't see, like, I mean, I feel like that's like a piece of, like, thing, like, we don't physically need to see all of his past in order to, like, know that he's an extremist. Like, they give us enough in the movie to make us realize that.
Maybe. I mean, I think he is operating separately from the rebellion, but for the same common goal as the rebellion. And I think in any war, any rebellion, you're going to have people that need to do what he's doing in order to help him be successful. Because I don't know. I just think that he's not nearly as extreme as we're told he is, you know?
I guess that's your opinion, my dude.
It is indeed. But I can see what you're saying, you know, obviously.
He is an extremist,
and that is what we're told, and that is kind of what we're shown through the way, like, his army is fighting and things like that. But, well, I mean, I don't see what Saw Gerrera is doing that's so extreme.
I don't understand, like, how you can be like, okay, yes, they tell us he's an extremist. Oh, these actions line up with the tendencies of an extremist, but I don't think
he's an
extremist.
What I'm saying is they shoot their like skirmish in that way to make you think, wow, these are like extreme, kind of like Islamic,
exactly,
kind of ambush kind of things. But that's the way it's shot. You know, it's like it's
it's not the way it's shot. It's the way they fight.
But in any rebellion, you're gonna have skirmishes like that.
Not necessarily.
Not
really, not like by like the rebellion and stuff.
But
like,
that's it was still a well coordinated attack for the purpose of stopping them from taking the Kyber crystals.
There's a difference, you know? Right? So like extremists like oftentimes use guerrilla warfare tactics. And that's what they were doing. They were using guerrilla warfare. They weren't like doing like match battles and stuff like that. Like the rebellion will usually do, like they'll do like, you know, sneak attacks or whatever. But like what they were doing was like completely just guerrilla warfare is like another tendency of an extremist.
So would you agree that Cassian then is also an extremist?
No,
he's not.
No.
So his willingness to just kill people willy-nilly doesn't make him an extremist.
Makes him a bad person.
Well, I mean, but that's extreme. Yes.
But it doesn't make him an extremist.
Well, what would make him an extremist?
Doing exactly what Saul Guerrera does.
Which is form his own army, separate from the rebellion, and attack the Imperials?
That's what I'm saying. It's like, literally, like, I just told you, like, you should stop comparing the two. But you're like, oh, but what about this guy? Like, who cares about what he's doing? Yes, we understand that he's a killer. He's a bad person. Yes.
What I'm saying is, I'm not comparing them. I'm just saying what Cassian does makes what Saw does okay or whatever. I'm saying if Saw is an extremist for what we see him do, then is Cassian an extremist for what we see him do? Because they're, I mean,
he's an assassin. He even says he's like, some of us are assassins, some of us are this, when he's like talking to Jin and he's like having like the his like little buddies like sign up for her mission to Scarif.
Well, I mean, how does Saw not fit into that then?
Because he doesn't. He's not a part of the rebellion.
He was.
Just because he was doesn't mean he is. His unwillingness to literally help them proves that he is not in the fucking rebellion. Just because he fights against the Imperials doesn't mean he's a part of the rebellion.
I need to probably, you know, refocus my thoughts on this so I can properly express what I'm trying to say. But no, I get what you're saying. I get what you're saying. I just think differently, okay? So
no, I don't get it at all.
I didn't say you got it. I mean, I didn't even say you had to get it, okay? It's okay. Look at Jamar. Look at what you started, okay? You should be very proud of yourself. What were you going to say?
I have a bunch of stuff written down here. All right, what other talking points do you have?
I mean, I'm just going with
the
flow.
I don't know. I just watched the movie. I didn't actually think we were going to talk about anything.
No, I knew we were going to talk about stuff. You know, I just, you know, sometimes you don't organize your thoughts. But, you know, if you have talking points, we should
cover those. Corny Vader.
Oh. Punny Vader, more like it. Yes, I don't like Punny Vader. I'm not convinced by Vader's first appearance in this film. I like him at the end, obviously. I mean, who doesn't?
Yeah, it almost like throws the tones of his own character out the door.
Like, the funny thing is,
don't
right,
choke on your own ambitions.
Yeah, good one, Darth.
Darth.
Yeah, this movie, okay guys, this is the funny thing, right? Because this movie to me feels so authentically Star Wars in the way it's shot, the way the music, the everything feels authentically Star Wars to me, and that's what I love about the movie so much,
right?
But we also get bargain bin Han Solo in the form of Cassian Andor. We get Dollar Tree Darth Vader.
Right.
Like, I mean, it's like you're getting like bootleg reprints of original Star Wars characters.
Brings
in a
me
way
to my next point, right?
Uh-huh.
Is the love connection between Cassian and Jin not almost literally like a carbon copy of like Han Solo and Leia?
I don't think there's a love connection there.
You don't?
No.
Are you literally
I don't
having
read a love
my
connection
life?
They don't do anything. I mean, there are looks here and there, but there's no...
That is fucking absurd. No. Oh, yeah. And we're just going to hug each other on the beach.
They know they're going to die.
We're just going to have longing...
What are they... Hold on.
We're
going to
have
on,
longing looks of lust into their eyes. Like, I just want to just bend her over and shit.
I think that's just human nature. If we were on that beach together, what are we going to do? Just stand there and stare at each other? Fuck you, bro! Fuck what's your name?
What's your name? Tony! Fuck you, Tony!
No, I mean, I don't think there's a love connection there. And I understand. I completely 100% understand why you would see that and why anybody else would see that. And that's 100% valid. I just don't see it. I don't think there's any love connection.
You need to message us, Jamar, on Twitter. That's where you follow us.
I think
us.
If there was.
Hold on. I'm 100% right about this. I can guarantee there was a love connection. They just never fully expressed it because obviously they never had the time to express it.
They had time right there at the end. If they loved each other, they would have started kissing instead of hugging.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Really? Okay. Yeah, I guess you're right about that.
Well.
But I definitely do think it was a love connection. What do you guys think, Jamar, mainly? Chime in on Twitter, my friend.
No, like I said, I can completely understand how people read that. I just think that at the end that was just showing, you know, how far they've come, how they respect each other now. I don't think there's anything lovey
bullshit.
There. I don't read that into it.
Garbage.
I think there's more.
Fake news.
I think there's more. there's
You're
more,
trash.
It's more likely that Baze and Chariot were getting it on than these two.
You're garbage water.
No, that was garbage water in our fucking sink the other week.
Yeah.
Fuck that shit. Anyway, yeah, I can see why anybody would think that.
Okay, all right. Hear me out, right? All right, let's just go with my theory, right? Let's just go with the theory that there is the love connection there, right? Would that not essentially almost be a carbon copy of the Leia and Han? They hate each other at first, and then all of a sudden, there's the one action that happens, i.e., Cassian, you know, taking her side on the matter when the rebellion rejected her, and all of a sudden she starts to see him in a new light. Oh, there starts to be these gazing looks and these awkward moments of shuffling around them and shit, and like they start to like each other and things like that. And almost verbatim, right? Han Solo thought Leia was an uptight, pretentious. Yeah, that word.
I'm
princess.
Very familiar with that word.
Yeah, you are. And does Cassian pretty much think the same thing?
That she's
pretty much all talk and all that thing.
I don't think so. I think like he's giving it the big end. You know, he's kind of like, you know, he does believe her. I think he believes her the whole time. It's just he has his orders and he's going to follow his orders. I don't see that connection. I mean, and with Han and Leia, wow, is that a way longer story? I mean, I think it starts.
Yeah, a longer story because they didn't plan to kill him right away. They were in the long game for the death of them two.
I think Leia first started liking Han when him and Luke were like in their little pod shooting at the TIE fighters chasing them. And then she hated him again when he left and got his money. He took off, didn't want to help him fight the Death Star. And then he came back at the end. That's when she started liking him again and then didn't like him at Hoth. And it's a whole fucking process, guys. Like, they liked each other the whole time, to be fair. They just kind of were like, nah. I don't think Cassian and Jin liked each other in that way, ever. So
that's why I said follow the goddamn theory,
right.
Christian.
I'm following your premise, right?
I'm not.
Your premise. If that is the premise, if they do like each other, what is the point of connection? Where do they start liking? Does she start liking him when he comes in and says, look at all these rebels I brought to help fight our cause? Is that where she starts liking him? Or is it earlier? Is there always this sex? Do you feel there's always a sexual tension?
No, at first I thought that there was like a little bit of hatred between the two. And that is oftentimes ways that relationships can start. Like
the fine line, right?
Yeah, the fine line between love and hate.
Right.
And which is the same exact way Han and Leia started, was the fine line between love and hate.
Right. So under that theory, right, do you believe the reason he didn't kill Galen is because of his feelings for Jin, or do you think it's his conscience, his morality came into play, or?
I think it was a little bit of both, because I mean, for some guy that, you know, is apparently an assassin, you know, he sure does care about her well-being.
Well, I mean,
he has no history with her. He has nothing to do with her, really. I mean, he could let her die.
Well, I mean,
he's a perceived bad guy, right?
You could say the same thing for Chirrut and Baze. Like, what motivation do they have to join the rebellion aside from,
they
you know?
They are one with the Force. The Force is with them.
I like how they take their little band of rebels and everyone else on Jedha. You're just like, bye guys, have fun dying. Like,
all right.
But I mean,
all right. You don't see my point.
No, I see your point. Like, and like I said,
I just need to know if I'm just crazy on that one.
No, you can argue. You can argue that all day, and I'll believe everything you say, and I'll believe that you believe it because
good.
I can see it. I just don't agree with it.
I like this partnership. You can agree with me and everything.
I agree that it's easy for people to see that, and it's a valid interpretation. I don't see it, which is also a valid interpretation. Unless you think it's not, because, you know, this is the Nerdy Boy Scott podcast.
Exactly. Didn't you know? Let us know what you guys think. Am I crazy? Was there not really a love connection there? I thought there was. I thought there was quite a bit of sexual innuendo there. You know, between the longing stares and the awkward side shuffles and stuff.
It's just like Han pressing against Leia in the control room. And
fill his semi?
Something like that.
Oh, what's that Pokemon? You happen to Thamie Thaler? okay. Right. Hold on. So, the Imperial Chain of Command.
Yes.
Is all weird in this movie.
It's more politicized in this movie. You have like your director of your military. You have Governor Tarkin. I mean, this is the Empire that is much, much more politically structured, I think, than militarily structured as it becomes in the future Star Wars films.
No. I mean, all right. So you have Krennic that So in this movie, it seems that Darth Vader is pretty much second in command to the Emperor.
Yes.
But it's not that way in A New Hope. Because no, he's not. Because Vader directly reports to Tarkin in that movie.
He doesn't report to Tarkin.
Yes, he does.
Does he?
Yeah.
Oh, where are you getting that from?
Because I've watched the fucking
movie. But what are you referring to? Like
when he reports to him, he reported to him in that movie.
What did he say to him? Like, well, how did he report to him? Is what I'm saying because I don't remember him directly reporting to Tarkin. I mean, the Emperor he's the Emperor's right hand man. He always has been. He always will be, and that's how it's explained throughout all of Star Wars. Maybe he informs Tarkin of things or discusses things with Tarkin, but I don't think he answers directly to Tarkin. And if you're referring to like when he was choking that one dude and Tarkin's like, release him or whatever, you know, I don't see that as reporting to him. It's just they work together.
But why would he listen to him if he had no authority?
He was always going to let him go. He wasn't going to kill that guy.
How do you know? He killed kids.
That was another time.
Another time when he wasn't ruling over the galaxy.
Exactly. When you're ruling over the galaxy, you have responsibilities. You can't just willy-nilly kill fucking important people in the government. He kills, you know, random admirals here and there. But, like, this guy, you know, had...
But Targo's like, release him. And he's like, yes, master.
If that's how you read it, then that's fair. But, no, I don't know. He didn't work for Tarkin.
I feel like there's an obvious difference in like the way people are like talking to each other and stuff.
Well, yeah, I mean, and even in this movie, Tarkin directly says, you know, inform Lord Vader. But you know that happens all the time in the original trilogy as well. So,
but in the original trilogy, also like directly told him what to do, and he listened.
That'd be the equivalent of me saying, hey, Scott, do this, and then you do it. I'm not your boss. I mean, I have no power over you. It's just...
You're a badass motherfucker and I'm trying to kill somebody. I wouldn't listen to you.
I didn't say you would listen to me.
You...
Oh, wait. Okay. Maybe I did. But in my head, I flipped it around for some reason that you would tell me to do something. I don't know, but whatever. Anyway, yeah.
My tattoo itches.
It's like, you know, it just, I don't know. I think he just did it out of respect.
Out of respect for who?
Well, I mean, you could argue all day that he answers to Tarkin, but all evidence to the contrary, especially because even in that scene, he's referred to as the Emperor's, like, a guard dog or the Emperor's whatever. You know, he works directly for the Emperor, so. Always has, always will.
Always has, always will. I think there's an awkward change there. Something changes.
Yeah, it's the cosplay costume that's the change.
Yeah.
The weird red-eyed, bulky-necked cosplay Darth Vader.
Right.
So, I mean, but the admirals and the other servicemen, I mean, their costumes look pretty spot on.
Oh,
do
they know?
They did. They did. Very authentic.
Go fuck yourself. Oh, okay. So when Krennic went to go see Vader in the movie, was that like a Sith Lord temple? They didn't like say where it was.
I am guessing it's a Sith temple on Mustafar, which is where he got his arms and legs chopped off.
Mustafar.
I for some reason, like, maybe that's like the Emperor's weird way of like making him, like, keeping him in his place. Oh, remember here where Obi-Wan destroyed you and I rebuilt you? Yeah. That's how I read it, at least, you know, is maybe. They built a temple there on Mustafar or another fiery planet.
Well, okay. So the reason I'm asking is because, like, all right, in like the Darth Bane series and stuff, you often like get to see like glimpses of like the old Republic and stuff like that. And you, like Sith Lords used to have, like the Sith Lords used to be like in many, like they weren't just two at a time. And like they used to have like, just like there's Jedi temples, there used to be like Sith temples and stuff like that. And I was like, was that like an old, like Sith temple, like ruin, you know, type probably thing? Well, that's an active one now.
Yeah, I thought, I mean, whether it is or not, it looked really cool. You know, it was like, you kind of look at it and you're like, wow, like, kind of like medieval kind of castle-looking fortress for the Sith, or at least for the Empire, so.
Right. So, all right, that was just a quick thing that I thought was kind of cool. Now, a thing I know that bugged Jamar, right, was like... the whole I'm one with the Force and the Force is one with me, whatever the fuck he was saying, right?
Yes.
And there was like the promise that, oh, okay, that might be a Jedi or whatever, but then it turns out, you know, he's just a person or whatever. And we talked about it in our original podcast, and I came up with the thing, well, you know, there's people that are in tune with the Force that have the ability to use Force powers that are not Sith or Jedi, that because obviously they've never been trained.
Force sensitive
people. And I think he is one of those people that, you know, if he would have been trained by a Jedi or a Sith, he could have been a Jedi or a Sith. And he could have wielded a lightsaber and such. I think he was used, right, as a reminder of the, you know, the coolest thing about Star Wars are Jedi and Sith. Well, hands down, the coolest fucking thing about them.
Yeah. I think if you think about it in the way that people don't use the Force as much as the Force uses people, because a lot of things he did, the Force to me is like this kind of divine thing to him in this movie, you know? Like, the Force guides him. Like, he doesn't sit there and intuitively know things. It's the Force is informing these things. The Force is allowing him to make it to the master switch. Like, he's not wielding the Force to his aid. The Force is just there to aid him.
Right.
And, you know, we discussed this a little bit, and I brought up in A New Hope when Luke is in the trench and Obi-Wan's voice comes to him and says, use the Force, and he puts his visor up. He doesn't actually use the Force to make the torpedoes go into the hole. He just trusts himself. He finally trusts himself because we know he can scale along that 2-meter wide thing and make it in there, because he confidently says in the press briefing, oh, I used to womp rats in my T-16. That was no bigger than 2 meters wide. He knows he is a good aim. He knows all this stuff. He's his own antagonist. He doesn't use the Force. He just trusts himself finally to stop using the stupid nav computer. And, you know, the Force maybe guides him, but he doesn't wield it. He doesn't know how to wield it at that point. Right. So, and I think that's one of the things. It's so interesting philosophically to talk about what the Force is and how it affects everyone in the world. Why do people say, may the Force be with you? It's kind of like God bless you, right? It is almost a divine kind of thing, you know. It's, you know, chance, if chance you call it, you know, call it what you want, but, you know, you can say it's luck, it's the Force, it's this or that, but it is just forces or elements in the world that are impacting the way things happen.
Yeah, you know? I think it's just exactly what it is. It's the force is just the divine. It's the ability. Certain people have the ability to wield the divine. I think that's exactly what the force is.
Yeah, I mean, and the idea of becoming one with the force sounds a lot like going to heaven, doesn't it? I mean,
maybe
you can read into these things or apply them where you want. I don't think these are what they're meant to be. It's like George Lucas wasn't like, I'm going to make the force a metaphor for religion, because I don't think that's what happened. Just,
well, how do you know?
I don't, but you can. And you
aha!
Can,
so you're speaking out your ass.
I'm a fan of applicability over allegory, so it makes storytelling way more interesting when you can see something and apply it to something, and then if someone comes out and says, no, it is irrevocably this. It is this, this, this. Then you're just like, oh, well, what's the point of me fucking reading it? I can't interpret what I want from it. You know? Yes.
Well, yeah, that's right. You believe in the whole death of the author bullcrap.
Well, I just think if someone can tell you what everything means, what's the point of reading it? Just go to the author and ask them, right?
Well, no, it's just a story that they want to tell.
Yeah, and then once you unfold all the secrets to that story, there's nothing else to learn from it or get from it, which is fine. I just think that you get more out of it. There's nothing wrong with that. Absolutely nothing wrong with that. I just think when the reader has the power to interpret and apply, then that is where you get the most from a story rather than the author telling you what everything is. So,
disagreed.
You can disagree if you'd like.
Yep.
But we're doing that right now. I mean, if we're saying these things about the force,
death of the author is fake. It's fake news.
I wasn't talking about death of the author. I'm talking about the difference between
fake news,
allegory, and applicability. Those are different
that
things.
Too fake news.
Anyway, yes, we can go round and round on these topics of literary analysis, but you guys probably get bored with that, to be honest. So.
Nope. I enjoy it. I enjoy taking the piss.
Yeah, so, I mean,
and making Krishna all squirmy.
So, let me ask you this, right? If George Lucas says, oh, yeah, the Force is definitely a metaphor for heaven and God and this and that, and I say, well, I don't really see that. I think, you know, you could apply it more to this. Is my interpretation invalid at that point? Because the author says
differently? I mean, you can believe what it wants, but what he says is true.
It's his interpretation of it.
It's his fact.
That's him writing it. He's interpreting his own writing, you know, for you.
Fact.
That invalidates my interpretation.
Correct.
So I have no value in this at all.
Nope.
So what's the point in liking it if you can't find your own meaning in it, right?
That's your own worry to find out, friend.
I mean, I think that if you believe something, you read something, you always believe this, apply it to this, apply it to this, and someone comes out and says, no, that's not true, are you going to say, oh, well, I guess I've been wrong all these years, or it makes you like it less or more or what? I'm just wondering. I'm just curious. Because to me, it's fine to have stories like that. That's what C.S. Lewis did. That's what The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, that whole series is. Puzzles to be unlocked, and once you unlock them, there's nothing more to go back to, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that kind of storytelling. But I prefer storytelling, personally, where you can get more out of it.
Okay, but what if this is not one of those stories? What if it's not? What if this is what he meant for it?
But people will still always have their own interpretations of Star Wars.
You can have your own opinions.
Own meanings of what it
you
is
can
to
have
mean.
Your own opinions doesn't mean it's a correct opinion.
Like the Jar Jar Binks theory?
Sure.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean it's a correct opinion. It's my opinion, though. Because Jar Jar Binks overlord supreme.
To me, these aren't opinions. It's just finding your own meaning in things. And it has nothing to do, I think, with
opinion. You could potentially find a different meaning, but how can you argue with somebody that literally wrote the story?
I'm not arguing with them. I'm just...
No. From you're arguing with them because you literally said, well, what does that mean, you know, my opinion doesn't matter or whatever, you know?
That's the question. I have no problem with J.K. Rowling saying Dumbledore is gay, but if I read it and say, I don't think he is, am I wrong then? My interpretation of the text that she gave us is invalid because she comes out and says something else?
Yeah.
All right. I mean,
it's her characters, right? I mean, she created the
just
because
she says something on a whim means it's fact.
How do you know she said it on the whim?
Because I watched when she said it. It was like kind of just a thing, you know, years later you throw out there, you know, and it's like, maybe. I mean, but at the end of the day, the books itself are where you find the meaning. The books are where you find what's true and what's not. And whether what she says, sure, anybody can accept that and find validity in it. But that doesn't make what we interpret from the book invalid. That's what Death of the Author is. It's not saying ignore the author. It's just saying that everyone's opinion is valid. Everyone's feelings and interpretations, as long as it's based on what the book tells you, is valid. So
it's weak.
It's not.
Weak.
It allows for more interesting analysis, I mean, than just...
How is it more
interesting? This is 100% this. Because it is 100%. You're telling me it's not more interesting? Okay, let's talk about Tolkien. It's about World War II. It's not. It's really not. And if people say it is, how is that interesting? Okay, yeah, it's just an allegory about World War II, rather than applying it to things even today or back then or in his life or this or that. It's way more interesting to be able to do that than to just say, yeah, it's about World War II. It's so uninteresting if it's just a puzzle to be unlocked like that, you know?
I disagree, man. I don't know, man. I just view stories far differently than you do. You like look, you feel like you need to find a superseded like deep meaning in every single thing.
If you can't connect to a character, I can
connect to characters if you know any which way.
Uh huh.
But they could be meant to be written in a certain way. That there's nothing wrong with that.
If you connect with them on one element, and the writer comes out and says, "No, that's not part of their character," you're just gonna say, "Oh, I can't connect with them anymore because of that. Because I was wrong the whole time. I connected with something that was immaterial."
I guess so.
I think it makes everything just much less interesting. But I mean, I guess we just look at things different ways.
I don't see how you can possibly discredit a writer if they sit there and claim something.
I'm not.
You are. You definitely are.
This is what I'm saying. That is their interpretation. It is valid 100%. But interpretation is also valid as long as it's based on the text they give me.
No, it's not. How can it be valid?
Right, right? Someone puts out a song and it connects to you in a way.
Everyone's valid. No one's right. That's so fucking garbage. That's a garbage way of thinking.
No. I didn't say everyone's valid. But if you're reading the book, if you're reading the book and you say this happens, I conclude this. And then the writer says, yeah, but no. Well, why is my interpretation invalid? It's based on what you tell me in the book. The book, at the end of the day, is where you should go, not the writer. Why would I go back to the book and reread it to find more depth when I can just say, I'm not going to do that. I'll just ask the person who wrote it.
You read a story, and if they say, well, this is why I wrote this, that's it.
Okay,
that's all there is to it.
That might be why they wrote something, but that doesn't mean that your interpretation of it isn't valid.
Well, you can't just be like, you know, he like bait, like, okay, Tolkien, right? He like if he did indeed write it, you know, to, you know, quote unquote mirror like World War II or whatever.
Which he didn't. But.
Oh, yeah. Which he didn't. Yeah, for sure.
He says he didn't.
All right. Then
he writes an entire thing in the opening of the Fellowship of the Ring about how allegory is the willful domination of the writer over the reader to tell you this is unequivocally this, whereas applicability is the willful interpretation of the reader, and that's the kind of stories he likes writing.
But then he sat there and contradicted it by saying it's not part of that.
He's not saying that. He's saying you can apply it to World War II, but that's not what I'm writing it about. He's saying apply it to whatever you want, because you can. You can easily say, this is reminiscent of things in World War II, and that's okay. But he's not saying you can't believe that. He's just saying that's not why I'm writing it. That's not what this is about. He's writing stories that you can read and interpret in ways that you want.
But that's his truth, though. That's his truth. He's literally coming out and saying, okay, feel free. Do what you want with that. But if a writer sits there and says something different, that automatically makes that right or wrong, that they're not allowed to do that.
How many times have I said that's
against
valid.
The that's against the laws, that's guys.
How many times
that's have I... against the You just sat there and told me just 2 cents ago that no, they're not valid. So which is it? You have to make up your mind.
When did I say it wasn't valid? When did I say that?
Oh my god.
I said over and over.
You're not listening.
Once again. Over and over. Their interpretation of what they write is valid. The reasons they say that is valid. But if I read the book and come to a different conclusion, that is also valid. If I'm just pulling shit from nowhere, from no man's land, and saying this is valid.
You can think, but you can think what you want, but it does not make it correct. There is a difference. There is an obvious difference between having a valid opinion on something and being incorrect. Hitler thought he was fucking correct about killing the fucking Jews. Was he right about it? Fuck no. Obviously, anybody can believe whatever the fuck they want. Does not mean that they are correct about something.
That's a different conversation. No, it is not, dude.
No, it is not.
Listen, you listen to a song, I listen to a song, we find different meaning in it.
Okay.
But they're both valid. The guy who wrote the song says it's about this. Oh, so we're wrong. We're wrong, right? Because it's about that.
It can make you feel something about something. It doesn't matter, but it doesn't matter. You can take your own meaning from it, but doesn't mean that's what it was intended for.
Well, despite what it's intended for, it can become something else. A lot of things are done with different intentions, but they come out some other way all the time. And I just think that when you analyze a book or analyze a text, a movie, whatever, it's not about being correct. It's about finding your own truth and your own meaning in it. And that makes it more interesting rather than just kind of this pedantic kind of, well, this is unequivocally what this is, and this is unequivocally what this is. And that can be fun and interesting as well, but you'll never get the depth or anything out of that you will if you find your own meaning in it. And yes, I understand what you're saying. You could be wrong, yes. But in whose opinion? The writers? I mean, if you disagree with the writer, you can't enjoy their work.
I didn't say you couldn't enjoy it. When did I ever say you can't enjoy it?
I didn't say you said that. I'm just like, that's...
So then why make a statement that way?
I'm posing the question, like is that how that works? You know, because I'm wrong about something, I can't enjoy it the way I want to because the writer says something different. Like, all I'm saying is, J.K. Rowling says Dumbledore's gay. I don't see evidence for that in the text. I'm not saying I don't. I'm just saying if I don't,
okay,
then that's valid. And you can say, well, you're wrong because she says Dumbledore's gay, but you don't have to take that into consideration. You don't have to believe everything the writer says, because if you never heard the writer say that, and then all of a sudden they do, and you're like, well, I never saw that. Now do I have to view Dumbledore a different way? Do I have to read it in a different way? Or, you know, it's like,
But what is changing something about him in that way?
Nothing's
what?
Changing anything. The text stays the same. That's okay. The thing. Just because the writer, I'm not saying she changed her mind, but if she does change her mind, like, that doesn't make the text different. The text is the same no matter what. So the meaning is always there to the reader. And we know she's changed her mind. The Dementors are 100% different from book 2 to book 3. Like, she does retcon and things like that. So, you know, the book always stays the same, though. So that is where you go to get meaning. Because writers can change their mind about anything later in life or say, I wish I would have done this. And instead of saying that, say, no, this is what this is. You know, if you want the meaning, go to the book, not the writer. That's my opinion. But, yes.
Weak.
You know that what I'm saying has validity. You I think you even agree with it on a certain level. You're just, like, trolling me. I think you definitely hear what I'm saying and think in your mind, wow, that's really interesting. Maybe I don't agree, but it's interesting. I'm just never going to fucking tell him that because I'm just going to fucking wind him up. I'm going to take the fucking piss out of him.
You know what's funny, guys? Is like, you probably hear it in his voice, but you should see how angry he gets. It's hilarious.
Okay, it's not that. I just get frustrated so a little bit at angry. Times about things.
The Hulk comes
because
out.
I have to keep saying the same thing, you know?
But then you start contradicting. Like, you get frustrated, and I feel like sometimes you say the wrong thing, but then it contradicts yourself.
Yeah, it's not my intent. This podcast has been more about other things besides Rogue One, okay? We've spent 25 minutes talking about
whose fault is that?
Yours, because I said I said, this is uninteresting. Nobody wants to hear it. And you said,
that's what I said?
Pretty much.
Interesting.
You said, hold my beer, bitch. We're going to talk about this now.
All right. Wait, what were we talking about anyway? Being one with the force.
Uh-huh. Yes, and that.
Yes. Oh, and then it became, you know, the interpretation of the divine and heaven.
Which,
and stuff.
Some people might see and some people might see, which is perfectly fine, just like the love between Cassian and Jin, which, you know, some people might see and some people might not see, whether it's intentional or not. You know, moving on. So, what would happen if Gareth Edwards, who directed the movie, said, oh, there's never anything between them? Would you say,
I misread that.
No, I think you'd say, oh, well, to me, it still mirrors Han and Leia. Whether you did that on purpose or by accident, it does.
No, I'd just be like, oh, I misread that. I thought there was.
Fascinating. I'd like to spend a day in your life.
I would not like to spend a day in your life.
It's hell inside this head of mine.
I can tell.
So, but yes, back to Rogue One. Jamar, what do you want us to say, man? Because honestly,
wait, there's one more point.
Go on.
All right. Location changing.
Yes.
And stuff. I thought it was brilliant. I thought it was awesome that they could introduce us to so many new worlds. And like,
I agree.
And like visually stunning, and it doesn't take away from the movie. But you know, I did read some reviews where people said that took them out of the movie. It was hard to tell like what time setting that they were in. They were doing so much jumping around to different worlds.
Amazing.
They didn't know what world they were in and stuff like that.
You mean how, like, when they go to a new world, they have the little block on there that tells you what world
it's
they're
a
on?
Whole new world.
I mean, this movie, you go to, what, 3 or 4 planets? I mean,
I thought it was brilliant, though. I thought it was pretty cute.
I mean, to be fair, this is the same thing that the Force Awakens got a lot of criticism for, is going to planets that looked just like these because of the original trilogy. But no, that doesn't matter, guys. So, despite people saying, oh, it's a desert planet, hashtag Jedha, hashtag Jakku. Oh, it's a forest planet, hashtag Endor. Well, to be fair, Scarif looked a lot more like Naboo. Oh, look, a fire planet like Mustafar. Oh, look at all these planets that look just like other planets that we've seen before. Guys, yes, there's going to be a fucking rainy planet. There's going to be a planet with force. There's going to be a planet with fire and death. There's going to be a fucking planet with
fire and death.
With islands and shit, okay? Yes, we're going to see similar looking planets. It's okay. Those are like the 5 elements of the fucking Earth, okay?
All right. But I think we can all agree, though, visually stunning.
Visually
absolutely
amazing.
Brilliant.
Yes, didn't you criticize the walkers originally? You didn't like the look of the walkers.
They're smaller. They were smaller, that's why.
They're prototypes.
They were smaller.
They were pretty dumb. They were pretty large.
Yeah, but, like in when they were on...
on Scarif.
No, not Scarif.
Jedha.
No. In the originals.
Oh, Hoth.
Yes, Hoth.
The Hoth ones seem smaller.
No, they were humongous, dude. They were huge. And the ones in Rogue One, they were able to fit inside of a city and like walk around without destroying buildings. And these ones, they needed
like...
Oh,
you're talking about the small guy? Those ones were on Endor.
What? What the fuck you talking?
On Scarif, those big fuckers that were chomping down a fucking forest? Those are the
same... What are you talking about, dude?
What are you talking about?
There were no fucking things on Scarif.
There
bruh.
Were hundreds of walkers on Scarif.
No.
You're thinking of the small little... Yes, those guys that were in Jedha that were like in the city, that's different.
What are those things?
It's a walker, but it's not... The ones on Scarif are at walkers, AT-AT walkers. These are like AT-RT walkers. Yeah, no, but they're all walkers, yeah. They're,
walkers.
They're just different.
I thought they were the same thing. I was like, what the fuck, dude? Why are they so small?
Hashtag baby cock.
Hashtag baby cocks. Fucking hashtag infancies.
Yeah.
infant
mortality rate.
Do you think, though, if... They set the movie within the frame of two planets, right?
Okay.
Does it make it a better or worse movie? What do you think?
No, I mean, I don't think it makes it worse. I don't think it makes it better. Like, definitely not better.
For people who complained about the change of setting and locations, it was confusing even though they tell you what planet they're on, even because they literally say it out loud, and then there's a text box at the bottom of the screen telling you where the fuck they're at. But, you know, it was confusing people.
Well, people need to pay the fuck attention.
I think it would have made it a way worse movie.
Okay.
Way worse.
The only confusing thing is, like, where Cassian kills the informant is, like, this little meteor-like weird place, like, between two meteors. Like, they show you that. Like, they name the city. I don't know.
I don't remember.
Yeah, it's like just a weird city in between two meteors. Or asteroids. Sorry, not meteors, guys. That's scientifically inaccurate, but whatever.
Fake news!
Yes. I mean, but... Okay, guys, I don't get it. We know that the Rebels are based on Yavin 4. What, you only want one other planet? Scarif? No, because we need to go find Saw Gerrera. Is he on Scarif? Just conveniently, everybody's on Scarif? Ending of this is happening? No, guys, this is a galaxy. We don't have two fucking planets where everything happens.
A galaxy far, far away, to be exact.
The Empire rules over Yavin and Tatooine, and that's about fucking it. Shut the fuck up.
Rip. Rip, rip, ripperoni.
Yeah.
So, one last thing. Just the idea of the entire movie is pretty badass. I've talked about it many, many times. Something, you know, in passing or as a joke or even comes part of, like, a story of, like, the lore, you know, is, like, there, like, you know, like, the major plot hole in A New Hope was the fact that this massive death machine had one, like, tiny little button, you know, to switch on, and then the whole thing gets destroyed, and it was a running joke for, like, 30 years, and then, you know, but they took that and developed it into an entire story. Like, I think that's the coolest thing that you can possibly do. Like, and like they did it with, in BVS with, you know, Wonder Woman in her World War, one.
Yeah. You can even do it with this movie with the off comment of, Saw Gerrera is an extremist who's caused us a lot of problems. You can make an entire movie about that.
That'd be cool.
Yeah. So,
then you can have your proof of his extremism.
Something like that. Yeah.
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 And I'm sure, Cassian would show up in that movie as well as an extremist jihadist.
Yeah, la, 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 la. But yeah, I mean, just like you can
or jihad.
That's a holy war. I don't see that this is like a plot hole in the original Star Wars, but you know, it is like the kind of running joke. Oh yeah, this vast empire has like this tiny little like one error that can blow up their whole space station. You know. And this explained that pretty well, because I think this movie just pretty much came out of like, oh, let's troll fans.
Yeah. Fans and make this super serious movie.
Which, I mean, ended in the only way it could have ended.
Which, arguably, I love endings like this, right? Because way too often, obviously, you know, the heroes must prevail or whatever, you know, in this case, they don't, you know, they achieve like their objective, but they die at the end.
Yeah. And
every single one.
And that's the only way it could have happened. That is the only way it could have happened.
I thought the ending to this movie was absolutely brilliant.
I think the only issue you'd have with it is that the first one out of our team that died is Cheridan Way.
Right?
Pretty sad.
And then the pilot died.
Yeah.
poor pilot.
That guy didn't get any fucking dues or credit through this movie. Like, he just got fucking repeatedly pummeled by people and told what to do, and he was like the fucking hero of the day.
Right?
So.
All right, Jamar. Buddy.
Oh, also,
pal.
To add insult to injury, Jamar, thematically, this movie is amazing. I mean, what's the easiest thing to sell? Hope. But it's the most powerful thing to sell.
And right?
Wow, does this movie deliver on that sentiment theme there?
I love it. But, you know, maybe next time you should come on our podcast and tell us what you think.
Yeah.
You little jerk.
Yeah, I criticized Saw Gerrera. You criticized
Christian.
Some contrivances. I mean, look, we gave you what you wanted.
We rehashed it, and it's still a brilliant movie. We did find some, you know, inconsistencies in the story, but in my opinion, it doesn't really take off. I don't remember what our original grades were. Do you remember?
Fucking awesome. I don't remember, but
probably
it was
like A plus.
I think
I'd probably give it like an A minus, maybe.
I think on my continually changing scale of Star Wars movies, it was close to Empire. It was like, you know, on the level of like Jedi, Force Awakens, and A New Hope.
Right.
It was like near there. which I know people don't like New Hope or Force Awakens as much as I did, but everybody's going to love The Last Jedi.
I loved Rogue One. I thought it was brilliant.
Yeah, and it, and one of the best follow-ups they could have possibly done to The Force Awakens, I think. Like, it, it felt so Star Wars, you know, and I think The Force Awakens did as well, and I think that almost too much to some people. But
I think this review, I read it earlier, pretty much sums it all up, right? It's the Star Wars movies that Star Wars fans never knew that they wanted.
Yeah, definitely.
Exactly.
And whether you are on the side of Daniel, who thinks that you can't connect to these characters, you don't really need to connect to the characters, a lot of them, to enjoy the story, I don't think.
I guess, you know, you could say, no, I think you could connect to the pie. The only character I really do believe that is, what's his name?
Cassian.
No, you can hella connect to him. Him at him more than almost anybody.
Because he's troubled and morally gray. Baze.
Yes, Baze. He is the one character that they did not develop, really.
Baze is Chirrut's good luck. Baze is Chirrut's force.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yes, that's what they kind of use him as. But he, at the same time, like, they don't develop his story.
He's Chirrut's butt monkey.
But they don't make him a connectable character, though.
Right.
I will agree with that on him. But on everyone else,
he's a bargain bin Foggy Nelson.
Yeah, pretty much. But yeah. Dude, we're still going to give it good grades. It's still an awesome movie, so go fuck yourself, homie.
don't go fuck yourself, Jamar. Please fuck your beautiful wife if you'd like.
No, no. Take your dick out. Wrap it around. You know what to do.
See, I can't do that because I live the hashtag baby cock life. Oh, okay.
I don't think everybody wants to know that, dude.
I don't care if you want to know. You know it now. But if in your mind, if you think I have a big dick, please feel free to believe that. Call me.
Oh, God. All right, guys. That's all we have for you on this Rogue One / Death of the Author arguments. Hope you guys enjoyed. Thanks for sticking with us till the end. Make sure you guys are following us on all of our social media accounts. What is so funny, you piece of shit?
Keep going, sorry.
I'm sure you'll probably tell me after we're done recording. But anyways, follow us on all of our social media, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Snapchat, our website, www.nerdyboyreviews.com. That's all we have for you assholes. So see you later. I'm Nerdy Boy Scott.
I'm Nerdy Boy Christian.
We have one simple message for you, and that's go fuck yourself.